Hello, loyal listeners. This is Stacy, and we are on for another episode of Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained.
Where are you from, Stacy?
I am from the U.S., and my business is called Focused Fun.
And I'm Sarah, and I'm from the UK, and my business is Separation Anxiety Solutions.
Hey, hey, it's Ness here from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded, and I am in Australia, and the rain has finally stopped. Anybody that's been watching the news will know that we have had floods and torrents of rain. It's pretty much been non-stop here on the Gold Coast in Queensland, Australia. I have not taken my dogs out yesterday, so they are being a little bit full on this morning. So if anybody hears any weird noises, that's what's going on. Crazy dogs. Today, we are talking about rescue dogs and separation anxiety. I did a little bit of research on this, girls. And what I found was that I didn't find anything. So it seems to be a lot of, no, seriously, there seems to be a lot of conflicting research on what creates separation anxiety in rescue dogs and what doesn't. So there was one study in 2019 by Nitsan Rehm. I think I got that okay. Shelter housed versus rehomed dog adjustment behavior and adoption outcomes. And there was only 27 dogs that were adopted from previous homes and only 25 dogs that were adopted from shelters. So not the biggest study ever. And it was completely subjective. It was done via questionnaire over the but with a telephone interview. So very subjective. And the owners were asked to report the dog's behavior as they recalled it about a week after adoption. So goodness knows how long after the adoption that interview took place, only that they were asked to recall it about, you know, what it was like after a week. And their findings were that there was no significant difference. So there's one kind of non-informative study in the sense that there wasn't much. Then there was a 2014 study by, okay, wait for it. Oh, there we go. There go the dogs. Sargasson.
Isn't that a study of studies of sort?
Yes, yes. So it's called Canine Separation Anxiety Strategies for Treatment and Management. And again, it was like some researchers. Sorry, I can't speak. I've been up so early. It's just coming on dawn here. If anybody's interested. Sorry, I'm really tired. So basically the some researchers report this and some researchers report the complete opposite. So
Let's talk about that though, because the interesting piece of that is if you're comparing rescue dogs and non-rescue dogs and trying to get a feel for how common separation anxiety is in each. I guess we don't know for sure if, because I've seen the same thing, that the research is kind of a little
all
bit
over the place
on it. Mm. And if it is pointing to more commonality in research dogs, it's not necessarily, like, how do we know that those dogs weren't relinquished because of their separation anxiety? And then they obviously still have it when they go to their new home. Mm. Because I know that shelters take intake surveys, but not everybody is honest on those. Sometimes the owners just don't know, right? They think their dog's being naughty by destroying things when they're not home. Mm. So they don't realize that they have separation anxiety. Sometimes they do realize they have separation anxiety, but they feel like their dog won't get adopted and would then possibly get euthanized. So they just say, give some other reason. Or it could be that the dog has a propensity for separation anxiety, and then this big life change and all the stress of being in a shelter and then rehomed has triggered it. So I guess, you know, even if we are saying that the incident is higher in rescue dogs, we still don't know if there's a causal relationship there or if it just...
And we don't really know what the research was like either, and how good it was, or how, you know, in depth it was.
It's difficult for research really with rescue, isn't it? Because although you've got a large number of dogs, you really, the backgrounds are so diverse. Like Stacey said, all those there, and then you've got the other ones as well, which are where they, maybe the owners are deceased, or the street dogs, stray dogs that have been brought in with no background at all.
That's the thing with rescues, is that frequently you just don't know the background. But I think also most people who might be listening to this podcast already have rescued their dog. So it doesn't matter. You know, you still just have to treat the dog in front of you, right? So thank you for rescuing your dog.
And exactly.
Let's give people who have rescued their dog some tips and thoughts on that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, we could say, we can try and delve into why a dog from a rescue has got separation anxiety, but how helpful is that? So perhaps we should talk about what solutions we could offer.
Let's do it. I think for me, my number one solution is to, I'm going to say wait it out as the title of that, but what I don't mean by that is letting your dog cry it out or, you know, be distressed. But I think it's important to realize that your dog has had a huge change in their environment, in their routine, in the life that they've learned or know, and to give them that time to settle and to protect them from negative experiences during that settling time. And video. Do video your dog. I think that's a theme. Let's make sure we mention video in every episode that we have.
That is a thing. Eyes on. Eyes on are always a good idea.
Yeah.
Because you've got no idea if you can't see.
Exactly.
When you get your rescue dog home, what kind of advice do we give people for how sort of like how long to stay at home for, or how long to give it before you test it to see if your dog can stay at home alone or not?
I think there's a lot of similarities between puppies and rescues. You know, I do, because like think about it. When you take a rescue home, even if they're 7, I just picked that number, could be, you know, any age that they are, you're gonna hit the potty training thing, right? Make sure that the dog knows where to go out, because you don't know their history. You know, have they been in a house before? Even if they have, are they used to indicating when they need to go out? All of those things, right? So you kind of take steps back and treat them as though they're not potty trained, so you can avoid the accidents. And I think the same goes for certainly puppies, but with home alone training, I think in the first couple of days, I would just give them time to settle and not have that exposure to home alone time. And then I think from there, I would go gently.
Yeah, maybe start with some door desensitization or something like that.
Yeah, I think you just have to see where the dog is. And I think that's, you know, another benefit of video. And, you know, the first time you leave your dog, don't leave them for 6 hours without video, and then, you know, be surprised when there's a puddle of drool in the crate when you get home. And, you know, I think that's another thing a lot of rescues require, is that in the shelter, they're certainly in some kind of crate or pen or small room. And in foster homes, if they're in a foster home, a lot of the fosters will crate them. And that might even be a requirement for some of the rescues, but not in Finland. Was it Finland that crates are illegal?
Norway.
Norway.
Norway as well. Sweden, Norway, Sweden, most of them actually.
Okay. Well, the rescues there won't have been in crates, but in other areas, I think almost every single rescue that I get, they say they crate trained them, and that can vary. The definition of crate training can vary. Sometimes it can mean just putting them in the crate, you know, like carrying them, putting them in the crate and shutting the door, or it could mean like an actual crate training plan, but as a way to kind of contain the destruction, as opposed to teaching them to be okay in the crate or teaching them to be home alone. So I do think when you get a new dog, it is hard to feel like you can trust them outside of a containment area. And I think that's especially the case if you have other animals in the house.
Especially if you've got kitty cats.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there seems to be, I've noticed a lot of, certainly rescues in the UK, there seems to be a lot of this kind of like arbitrary advice that none of the dogs that they rehome are left alone for more than 4 hours a day. That seems to be
really
quite a common, it's quite a common thing that I see with, you know, when they give you the, they do the synopsis of the dog. It's that seems to be very, very common at the minute. So I'm not quite sure if that's where that's come from, whether that's a separation anxiety thing or just a thing that they think is good to do. I don't know.
But I mean, for a newly adopted dog, 4 hours is probably way too much.
I think
that what we should say is, especially if a dog's come out of a shelter as opposed to a foster home, but you know, give your dog time to decompress before you do anything, just to stress that point again, which you already stressed, Stacey.
And I do think it depends, like not only where the dog is coming from, but their history. If they're super frightened and not used to people at all, like for instance, I fostered this dog, his name was Frankie, and he was so scared, and for the first 3 days, like he just wanted to be in the crate. We had the door open, but he just wanted to be in the back of the crate, like did not, and we just, you know, ignored him to, you know, not put pressure on him and all the things. And then, you know, once he was more familiar with us and kind of how everything worked, which honestly took a few days, but then after that, it wasn't okay with him if we left then. Like, so it went from being so frightened from us, he didn't even want us to look at him, to being super attached to us and couldn't handle being left, you know? So it's interesting in that 3 days, even how much his behavior changed from one extreme to the other. And I think it is important to just remember that the behavior that you see early on with a rescue isn't necessarily going to rest to stick. And also sometimes dogs are so shut down that the behavior will pop up later, you know, behaviors good or bad that you weren't expecting will pop up later. So it kind of goes both ways.
I think one of the things we should say is that many of these dogs might be on their third, fourth, or even fifth home, like especially if they've got separation anxiety, because people often don't want to deal with these dogs. They are hard work and, you know, take a lot of time, and you can feel like a prisoner and in your own home and all that sort of stuff. So these dogs can be rehomed. And it's, I mean, really, is it any wonder they're clingy?
Right.
Yeah, so yeah, we have to take that into consideration. And, you know, if we can work with those dogs instead of saying, well, I can't handle this, and rehome them again, and thereby maybe making that dog worse, unfortunately.
Right. So far we have giving them time to settle. And then when you do start leaving them, go gently and make sure you're watching on video. When you feel like they're settled, which again can totally depend on the dog and what their background is, how do we feel like we should proceed with some home alone training?
Before we go down that road, and we have mentioned this on a previous podcast, but it doesn't hurt to mention it again. Many listeners will have heard about the 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months. Do we want to run through that and just say, perhaps it's not appropriate for these dogs to consider that, at least take it as a generalization, not as a gospel. They call it the 3-3-3. Yeah, no, well, they call it the 3-3-3 rule.
I call it the rule of threes.
Yeah, or the rule of threes, yeah. And they do say it's a general guideline, so every dog is unique and will adjust differently. And I think that's the most important thing, but just so people know what we're talking about, they say in the first 3 days, the dog can feel overwhelmed, be scared and unsure of what is going on, not comfortable enough to be himself or herself, you know, may just be uncomfortable and might test the boundaries, could be a bit shut down. After 3 weeks, they should be starting to settle in, starting to feel more comfortable, figured out the environment, getting into a routine, let their personalities come through a bit more. And it might be the point in time when behavior issues start showing up. And then after 3 months, should perhaps finally completely feel at home, building trust and a true bond with the new owners, understands the routine, and has a sense of security. But, I mean, separation anxiety dogs are a different dog, aren't they? You know, like they've got issues in that sense that they may not be able to follow. They're individuals, obviously, and, yeah, the 3-3 rule, or what do you call it, the rule of threes, isn't necessarily going to apply. We have to really acknowledge that it is a generalization and not to be taken as you know you can't get to 3 months and say, how come my dog's not settled in, you know, it's been 3 months. Well, hang on, your dog just might not be that dog, you know.
Some dogs take months and years, don't they, to settle once when they've come from somewhere else. I think it's a funny one, because I think how it says about, you know, behavior issues may start showing up sort of like between the 3 weeks and the 3 months. I think for your separation anxiety dogs, or for the ones that look like they might have separation anxiety, that would probably show itself a lot earlier. And that's the one that might not be the real deal, as in that they look like they've got separation anxiety, but once they've settled down after a few months, they're actually okay.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's not separation anxiety, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. If it's just a settling in thing, that could be a behaviour type issue that you think you've seen a lot earlier, but that is not. It's not real separation anxiety. It's just that settling in thing where they're just slightly unsure because you know maybe left them a little bit too long and a little bit too early. Because I don't know that. I mean, do you know any rescuers that actually give people advice on what to do with regards to leaving them at home? I don't think I've seen anything.
No, I haven't.
I think maybe here some of them say put them in a crate.
That's about it here too, is it, they'll advise people to crate them, but they won't like talk about doing it gradually or giving your dogs a couple days to settle in before you even think about it. You know, it's, I think the rule of threes or whatever you want to call it is a little bit useful in that it explains what the progression might look like as the dog settles.
It gives people a rough guideline, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, but I don't think the time frames are as useful. So, because if the dog has experienced trauma, then that all goes out the window, right? And if the dog is that happy-go-lucky, super resilient dog, he might be settled in a day. I mean, so I think it's a little bit of a guideline, but I do think it's interesting what you say, Sarah, about how, you know, the behaviors that you see right away may or may not be lasting. And then Ness, what you were saying from the rule of threes, how sometimes you start seeing behavior problems pop up later that didn't show in the beginning. So I think both things can be there. I'm working with a rescue who, when they initially found her, they were trying to find her owner. She was a stray. She was showing some guarding behavior, some reactivity, some separation anxiety, like all of the things, right? And after she had some time to settle in, you know, I said, let's manage the guarding and the reactivity for now and work on teaching her to be okay with being home alone. And the guarding and reactivity are gone now. You know, it was just, you know, during that emotional initial time that those behaviors were leaking out. And now it's not a problem. Mm. So I do think it's interesting.
Yeah, it's all connected, isn't it?
I was just thinking about when you were talking there about, we were talking about rescues and things. I was just thinking about the phenomenon with the street dogs, particularly like Romania and Cyprus, places like that, where they're getting a lot of street dogs, or where they're bringing a lot of street dogs, certainly over here at the minute, and about their propensity for escape, because quite often that's what would we call a symptom of separation anxiety can be destruction around exits, isn't it? Around doorways and around windows and things. And I think there must be some cases of, certainly with street dogs, where they're being misdiagnosed maybe with separation anxiety because they're showing escape behaviours around doors and windows. And it's literally just because they want to escape. It's got nothing to do with being on their own.
Right.
It's just that they want to be back on the street and not in a house, because the house is, for them, terrifying.
Yeah.
Confinement, did you say, Stacey? Yeah,
yeah,
it's like
it is.
A giant crate, isn't it?
Sometimes when a dog comes into a house from a shelter or a rescue, that dog has a tendency to attach to one or two people quite strongly. So I think it's important when you get a rescue to make sure you're spreading the love, helping the dog form relationships with other people, so that if it does turn out that the dog does have separation anxiety and it's not just having a rough time settling in, that you do have that kind of village to help you manage absences.
Yeah, it's so hard because it's usually the mum, isn't it, that is the primary caregiver. She's usually the one that does most of the walking, most of the feeding, the training, the treating, the cuddling. Dad might come home and have a wrestle with the dog for 5 minutes and that's about it. The kids are, you know, they want to have a dog, but they also want to be on their iPads or whatever. So it's usually mum that the dog bonds with the most. So, yeah, but we have to be really aware of that and make sure that other people are doing their bit to make sure the dog doesn't get hyper attached to mum or whoever it is.
Yeah. So just inviting friends and families, neighbors, maybe utilizing daycare, those types of things, just to help safeguard that from happening.
I'm sure I've seen a research paper somewhere about how quick they bond with one person when they've I can't think where I've seen it though. I shall have to go and have a look for that.
Yeah, that would be interesting actually. I didn't realize there was a time frame.
Yeah, I think when they form attachments, I think it was ridiculously fast. I mean, like ridiculously fast, not.
Wow.
I wonder if there's some breed propensities for that as well. Like some of the more independent breeds might take longer or.
Yeah, you'd imagine that would be the case, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
you would. And I guess like street dogs maybe would be ones that might not be, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because they wouldn't just...
They're more independent.
And they just maybe would be mistrustful of humans initially, because I think in a lot of places they're not treated well by the general population. Yeah.
And probably more socialized to dogs than people as well. That seems to be the case, doesn't it, with them? Because they've spent most of their lives with other dogs on the street rather than with people.
I think bottom line is that it's going to require some patience.
Yeah.
And I think even if your dog doesn't have separation anxiety, but they're struggling a little bit to settle in, treating them with the same protocol that we use for dogs with separation anxiety can make all the difference in how quickly they settle in and even possibly long-term problems. And I think if your dog is just having trouble settling in but doesn't have separation anxiety, I think that the training does seem to go more smoothly. You know, there's not as much variability. You can usually increase in chunkier durations and that sort of thing. So it's not as much of a slog as a, you know, traditional separation anxiety case may be, but it's still, I think, really useful to use that protocol as a guide.
Definitely.
Yeah, sure. Give them time to settle in and take it slowly. Don't rush it. If you rush it, you could fall over.
Yeah. So what do you guys think about the role of medication in rescue dogs?
For some, depending on where they've come from and well, actually, depending on their level of anxiety when they are, like you say, there are some that just kind of like drop into a home without a second glance. But certainly for the ones that are struggling, I don't think there's any reason why you shouldn't, you know, speak to your vet. And even if it's just short-term situational medication, certainly to help them get through those first few weeks. I think if anything is, you know, a bit of a welfare issue really to let them suffer just because it's not something that you particularly would like to do, but for the sake of your dog, I think it's definitely worth thinking about it. And again, that's not something that a lot of rescuers would suggest, whereas for some dogs a couple of weeks on something just to help them initially can make a massive difference.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting though, because most often I hear pushback, you know, well, my dog's still settling in, so I don't want to give them the medication, instead of, well, let's just get them the medication to help them settle in, and then we can start dialing it back to see if they still need it. It is certainly two different ways of approaching it.
It's a very chicken and egg thing, isn't it? Or it seems
to be. It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Is this the right time to give your chicken impression, Sarah?
Yeah. Yes, do it.
I'm going to do an impression of beating a small poodle in a minute. I've just had to take one of Danny's T-shirts off him.
Yeah, I think if you said chicken, you should do a chicken impression.
Yeah, same.
Who else is going to do any? If I'm doing chickens, then at least you've got to back me up with something else.
Moo.
Oh, fabulous. I just felt like I was on a farm. Just like being there.
Ness, what are you bringing to the table?
Meow.
Always the cat with her.
What noises do kangaroos make? Do they make any noises?
They make thump, thump, thump noises when they're running, bouncing, yeah. Yeah. But they don't make, well, I mean, they probably do vocalise, but, you know, it's not like they're not known to make a certain noise, to my knowledge.
Not something that David Attenborough covers very often, is it?
Okay, so males make a loud coughing growl or bark.
Yeah, probably often, when they're about mating season or something.
Yes, exactly, when fighting over females. Eastern gray kangaroos have been documented to a soft clucking sound when interacting with a female. Mothers make a similar sound when communicating with their joeys. So the chicken sound could just double as kangaroo. It's fine.
Oh, the clucking.
Yeah, the clucking. It's fine.
Cluck, cluck.
And Ness, your dogs can be doing the growling impersonation.
Yeah.
I have like a squirrel, no joke, out my window who's just been like sitting here watching me.
Oh, wow.
I'll send you guys a picture when we're done. But he's just like sitting right out the window, like with his little feet up and just like, watching me talk.
Do you feed them?
No.
No, he's learning.
Oh,
learning all about rescue dogs, bless him.
Yeah.
We get possums here. So possums are our squirrels, sort of. But yeah.
Really?
Well, no, because if a dog attacks, because the dogs would probably like to attack a possum because they're, you know, prey. But unfortunately, the possums can do some serious damage, unlike a squirrel.
Anyway, back to rescue dogs.
Did we go off topic?
No, not at all. Oh, cracky. Our best piece of advice then, or our advice to anybody bringing home their lovely little rescue is number one, get a camera.
And if you don't have a camera, I mean, we are all familiar with Zoom, right? Mm. So set up your computer and Zoom yourself.
Yeah.
Like, so leave your laptop in watching the dog and have your phone connected to it. Just mute your phone so that if you say words that it's not coming through to the laptop, and then just watch and see what's going on there.
And if you've had a rescue dog, when you listen to this, if you've had a rescue dog for a few weeks and you have been leaving them and you've been coming home and maybe there's been some destruction or toileting in the house, don't just assume that they're being naughty. It could be that they really are having a bad time being left at home alone.
Exactly.
Yeah, very true.
Anything on breed rescues? Breed specific?
I don't think, it doesn't seem like the research that there is about breed differences with separation anxiety. I'm not sure that they split it into rescued or not. That would be interesting. But as far as just breed specific tendencies, there are a few, but there doesn't seem to be agreement between studies. And so we don't know if that's like a regional thing or a perhaps like a genetic thing in that the area where it was tested.
I wonder if there's a difference between countries as far as rescues and separation anxiety goes.
Mm.
Because I'm pretty sure, I can't remember which country it is, but I know there's somewhere that don't have any rescue centres, any rehoming centres, but I can't remember where it is. I think it's something that's somewhere like Iceland, although I could be wrong. So I'd have to find out, but there's definitely somewhere that don't have any rehoming centres because they don't need them. It makes me wonder what their rate of separation anxiety is. Be interesting to find out, wouldn't it?
We hear about, oh, this breed's got lots of separation anxiety, you know, by, is it genetics, blah, 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 blah. But then, and I mean, I would say, you know, you hear about a lot of oodle types, whatever oodle it is. But is that just because the breed's so popular at the moment? So if we're talking anecdotally, I mean, that breed in particular is very, very popular around the world. So perhaps the reason we hear more of those having separation anxiety is just because there's more of them or they're more popular.
Yeah, it seems like Iceland does, in fact, have rescue centers. So I don't know.
There is somewhere that doesn't, though. There's somewhere that has got no street dogs and no dogs in shelters or something like that. I forget where it is, though.
Yeah, I wonder if that's a more, like, what's different about how their society runs that makes it easier for dogs to live compatibly.
And see what the magistrate would be able to tell what the prevalence of separation anxiety was 20, 40, 60 years ago.
Oh, yes, so indeed.
All very different, aren't we now?
Yeah.
Our lifestyle's changed so much.
Mm. And we've got a lot more companion dogs, I think, than we used to do as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in the old days, the good old days, you know, dogs were probably allowed to free roam around the street and they just knew where home was when it was dinner time. And but now it's backyards and, you know, dogs should be confined either in the house or the backyard or whatever. So their lives have changed as along with ours, I guess.
Yeah. The good old days. The good old days were back when I was a kid, so they can't be that old. I remember my auntie, her dogs just used to go out and go do the stuff and then come home later at dinner time.
When the lights go out,
yeah,
it's time to go home.
Yeah.
No, sorry, when the lights come on, isn't it? Yeah. I think, I mean, obviously with any dog, so we're saying make sure that they have a settling in period. And during, you know, if you suspect separation anxiety, at least make sure that they're still getting adequate enrichment and exercise and all the other needs met, and then take it slowly. Don't rush into leaving them home alone for, you know, a long time. I wouldn't even do it for an hour initially. I'd probably just test the waters, do some door desensitization, and then pop out for, you know, start at 5 seconds and just do some training around that in 10 seconds and just build it up, like exactly what you were saying with the puppy, Stacey.
Well, and also I think that it's important if you're not sure how to proceed, get help early. Like, don't, because every time the dog is exposed to a scary absence or an absence where they, you know, pretty much have a panic attack, that's more work in your training that you have to do to overcome that, right? So if your dog comes to your house and never has an exposure to a scary absence, you are in a better position to move forward with training than if you've been leaving them to have a panic for 8 hours a day for 2 months. Not to say you can't then start training if you've already done that, but if early on you're noticing some behaviors and in your gut you're like, I think it's better just to reach out for help right away.
And the other thing, of course, is if you get a rescue and you think it might have separation anxiety and you go back to the rescue and they say, oh yes, the reason it was rehomed, or, you know, the old home, it did have separation anxiety, you've always got that positive side in that with you, they're in a completely new place, new home, new house, new setup, new environment. So with you, hopefully they've never had any bad experiences.
Yeah, they've got no history of being in a panic or fear base in that house.
Which has to be a positive for you going forward, training with it. Are you being eaten by a Malinois, Ness?
No, two of them are playing, and they're vocalizing. That's what happens when it rains for days on end, and they didn't get out yesterday.
You've got different birdies today as well. They're not crows, are they?
No, they are rainbow lorikeets. So a parrot sea sort of birds. Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah, chirpy chirpy. We have sparrows. Mm. We've got a pheasant that comes to visit every day. Does that count?
A pheasant?
That's cool.
Yeah, hangs around in my
for you?
Does it what?
Leave eggs for you.
No, it's a boy.
Well. How do you know it's a boy? Oh, probably how it looks.
Well, I'm going to say it's not the obvious sign, but they're very pretty. Big and pretty. And he wanders around my front garden.
Do the dogs chase him?
Ernie's scared of him.
No.
But then again, Ernie's also scared of the chickens, so.
Okay, so to summarize, we want to give your dog time to settle in. We want to make sure you're not leaving them longer than they can comfortably handle. Get a video on them and do some gentle home alone training with them, and make sure that you spread the love, help them form other relationships with other people. Overall, have lots of patience, and did we mention use video?
Yes, we did. So, everybody, thank you for listening to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and a ton of other listening apps. If you like us, please share us with your friends so they can also find us, and give us a 5-star review as well. I am Ness Jones. I am from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded, and I am in Australia. Please reach out if you need some specialist help to help your dog get over its separation anxiety.
My turn.
You told me I couldn't go in the middle.
Okay. I am Stacy Bell, and I am with Focused Fun Dogs. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook. My website is focusedfun.net. Please reach out if you need me.
And I'm Sarah McLaren, and I'm based in the UK. At Separation Anxiety Solutions. And like the other guys, if you need help and you're concerned about your rescue dog and whether they've got separation anxiety, then please feel free to reach out to hello@separationanxietysolutions.com. Thank you for listening.
Goodbye.
Yes, and also thank you for rescuing.
Yes,
bye.
Indeed.
Bye.
Thank you.